Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bores and James Forsyth. We're coming to you slightly later today because of our Spectator TV episode, which you can watch on catch up on tv.spectator.co.uk with Andrew Neil hosting. But on to today's podcast. It's a big Brexit day and the EU has taken the internal markets bill extremely seriously and threatened legal action. Katie, can you update us on the developments today?
Yes, so we knew already that Brussels and plenty of people actually in Parliament in the UK were not particularly impressed at what the government are planning to do with the internal market bill. They were taken aback when you had a cabinet minister stand at the dispatch box and say they were going to break international law. And I think today we've seen the reverberations from that. So there was a meeting from the Joint Committee where Michael Gove appeared this morning talking about the Northern Ireland Protocol. And in that meeting, the EU side suggested that they would not be able to proceed past the end of this month with negotiations unless this was dropped from the internal market bill. So what we're talking about being dropped is this idea of rewriting parts of the withdrawal agreement relating to the Northern Ireland Protocol and state aid. Now, the response from the UK side is they are not going to do this, but therefore we seem to be at a point where it's hard right now to see how both sides are going to come to some kind of agreement. The EU is saying they have to drop the internal market bill parts on this, and the UK side is saying they are not going to do this. We've had a pool clip from Michael Gove making that very point. So both sides are saying no. Technically, talks are ongoing still. David Frost has confirmed that, I think, in the past half an hour. And there is this sense that it seems as though talks will keep going, probably to the end of the month is what we've seen. But by the end of the month, that's when the EU is saying if this hasn't gone, they won't want to continue the talks. So there's a question as to what happens at that point.
Now, James, if this was a ploy of brinkmanship to get the EU to give us a good deal, is it backfiring? Or is it the British government's intention, as some in the EU seem to be suggesting, that this is a way of forcing the EU to walk away with no deal?
Well, I think it is worth remembering that the British government still wants a deal. Its preference is still for the Canada-style deal. Now, the EU say, oh, you can't have that. But I think there is an element here that what the UK side of trying to do with this internal market bill is to make both sides realise what happens if there isn't a deal, to kind of look over the precipice and get that. Now, this might seem an odd thing to say, but considering that the EU is clearly furious and is threatening to walk away, but the British side of the negotiations think that this round, you know, it's not a high bar, admittedly, has been more constructive than previous rounds. And they argue that that is because they've kind of injected this note of realism into the talks. Now, I think what's quite clear is the government isn't going to pull the internal market bill. It's going to get it through the House of Commons. Whether it gets through the House of Lords is another matter, which we might come on to in a second. And the EU isn't going to back down on the implementation of the withdrawal agreement. And therefore, I can only see two routes out of this situation, frankly. One is that you get some agreement in the Joint Committee on the at-risk goods, on allowing British supermarkets to be treated essentially as trusted traders, so, you know, you don't need to inspect all of their shipments on SBS grounds because, you know, you accept that they are legitimate businesses. And then you get a breakthrough in the trade talks on what the state aid regime is, and so suddenly these clauses in the internal market bill become kind of otiose because you've managed to resolve the issue elsewhere. And I think that is the question. Can you get enough momentum going to get there? And I think the only way you're going to get that momentum going is if you get the kind of national leaders to engage. I think
Chimera.
Yeah, indeed. Michel Barnier and David Frost. I don't mean the negotiations there. I think they are kind of sufficiently in their respective trenches and the negotiating sides, but you're not going to see the breakthrough there. You need somehow the political will to be injected into that process from the outside to push things forward. Look, I think this is very high stakes, right? And the UK has currently got the EU in a fury. It's got the Speaker of the United States House of Representatives saying, you know, forget a US trade deal. Well, this is the case. And, you know, it's got former leaders and not just kind of Remainers, but also, you know, Brexiteers like Michael Howard, very worried about this. But the question is, can this actually get some movement and momentum into the talks? That is the huge gamble but Downing Street have taken.
Katie, in terms of party management, are those more moderate Tory MPs on Brexit now getting cold feet because even people like Michael Howard, as James has mentioned, has come out criticising the government's plans?
Well, I think there are quite a few Tory MPs who are not feeling infused by the recent turn of events. There's some who have gone public. I still think if you're looking at numbers of people who are going to vote against, who are going to cause difficulties on this bill in the Commons chamber, it doesn't yet feel as though we are near a number which is going to force the government's hand. And I think there is a difference between MPs who are willing to vote against and MPs who want to tell people how unhappy they are. I think there's more of the latter than the former, and I still think there's a sense that they want to be talked around. Definitely the government has made it harder for lots of these MPs to support them because Brandon Lewis was just so clear that it was breaking international law. The bill is also, I think, to a degree, but you could argue ways around, you know, or justifications and so forth. And I think there are many who feel as though they've been forced into a situation where they don't want to be on the record as supporting such a breach which the government have laid out. But in terms of where this goes as a rebellion, I think for now at least, and I do think we're going to hear more disquiet from Tory MPs, but for now I think the real battle is in the House of Lords. The fact you've had Michael Howard, Norman Lamont, to, you know, very senior Brexiteers in the House of Lords voicing their issues with it, I think does show you that even the people who you would think ought to be supportive in the House of Lords are not on the government side here. And when you speak to, you know, figures in government, ministers, about how exactly you plan to get this bill through, I mean, yes, you get it through the Commons, but it seems very clear that the Lords is going to vote it back. So what's the convention? Someone said to me, oh, it's the Salisbury Convention. Well, that convention is if it's in the manifesto, whereas I think people are getting quite ready to argue this is a change to the manifesto. So I think that's where the difficulty and, for now, the biggest battle is going to be.
So I mean, Katie's hit the nail on the head. The government's hope is that there'll be three rounds of ping pong and then the unelected House will back down in face of the votes from the elected House. And I mean, the other bit of government thinking is that, you know, this is Brexit and the House of Lords isn't going to want to kind of look like it's kind of the last red out of the Remainers. This is why Michael Howard and Norman Lamont's interventions today are so important. If Michael Howard, who is arguably the most senior Brexiteer as a former Tory party leader in the House of Lords, you know, is prepared to oppose it, that will give a huge amount of cover to the rest of the Lords to say that this isn't about Brexit, this is about the rule of law, this is about Britain's place in the world, this is about whether the question of, you know, what value the British government's word has. So I think this is the problem for the government. I think Katie's right. I don't think the government is going to lose in the Commons. You know, I think that there is an amendment down in the name of three Tory MPs, Bob Neil, Damian Green, the former Deputy Prime Minister, and Oliver Heal, the former Solicitor General. I think that will gain some support, but it's not going to gain enough support to freshen the government's majority. The challenge for the government is going to be in the Lords, and I think as Katie said, you know, I think if the government tries to pull the Salisbury Convention, I think lots of people will say, hang on a second, and they will point to the line in the manifesto talking about unfettered access for Northern Ireland. I think people will say, no, you fought the entire election on get Brexit done, every Tory candidate was pledged to support the withdrawal agreement, this bill changes the withdrawal agreement, so we're not buying the Salisbury Convention argument.
Katie, how seriously should we be taking the warnings from Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of Congress, about the fact that this threatens a UK-US trade deal?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a particularly good sign. I think that ultimately you have to wait and see what the realities of the situation are. So who, you know, is president at what time, which party is in power, how things have moved, you know. There is still a chance that the EU and the UK come to an agreement that avoids some of this stuff. So I think there's still a lot of unknowns, but I think it does point at the problems ahead. And although there's been this sense, and James was obviously one of the first to write about it, that although figures in number 10, you can see the pros actually of a Biden presidency over a Donald Trump one, I think that Rater, you started his chatter saying, well, actually, if this is the case, well, this could be quite difficult for the government if Joe Biden wins. You know, maybe actually you want someone like Trump, who might think this is kind of behaviour which is taking control, and they might say, you know, well, actually this is the kind of hard tactics you need. That might be more the view of that president than Joe Biden. But again, I do think it is too early because we just have so many unknowns in the situation, but it does point to the issues here, which is one of the things you keep hearing from senior Conservatives, including the Lords in there today, is this idea that it makes it difficult for the UK to cast judgment on other countries I mean, they break international law, but also this idea that how would you trust people? Mm. Or how would you trust this government you making agreements in the future? And I think the trust issue is one that's clearly going to come up in this route. Now, it may be the number 10 thing, it's worth that. They're going to get more from it. But I think trust issues will come up as a result of this.
Katie and James, thanks very much. And you can subscribe to this podcast through all the usual routes. And if you missed our Spectator TV episode tonight, you can watch it on Catch Up. It's on tv.spectator.co.uk. or you can watch it on YouTube shortly. So do check it out if you want to see Andrew Neil in conversation with James and Katie about Brexit and more. And we also hear from Fraser Nelson and Freddie Gray, our US editor, as well as Dr. Elisabetta Grappelli, to hear the latest on vaccines. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow.